I never make a mistake like that. Oh, I never make mistakes like that. Oh, that's like two. I've never done that in like 237 episodes.
Congrats, man! First mistake in the entire.
I was thrown off. You know, honestly, you know why it threw me off is because you never write notes above the
Didn't you misspell a guest name last week?
Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast about Charlotte. Let's. Let's do a podcast.
Welcome everybody to the latest episode of the Charlotte Podcast. This is John.
And this is Miller in this episode 238. John, what's on this week's episode?
So this week we are revisiting the Tip the Kitchen initiative that we talked about a couple weeks ago with the Fifth Street group. So really great conversation, getting an update. I'm super pumped about what they've come up with and how well it's going. It seems like transformational. So stay tuned for that. And then we'll talk a little cheers and jeers at the end.
You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Make sure you leave a rating, review. Maybe we'll create a line item and you can start tipping the podcast. You can follow us on social media at CLT Podcast. Last week, great episode with Spencer Luters of the 24 Foundation talking about 24 Hours of Booty, how it changed last year, what they're adjusting this year, so on and so forth. John, for the third podcast in a row, you have an item in bullet points that I think is, waste of time is harsh. Pointless? I don't know. Your NFT podcast, we're doing it next week.
Why don't you like it? I don't understand. What's not to love?
This whole purpose of this is for us to share things with people and have interesting conversations that people listen to, I think. And this defeats the whole purpose of that.
But a person will get to enjoy a conversation.
Can we put random
second harvest?
Can we put random like stipulations in? Like, I would love to be able to steal this.
What do you mean?
Like we talked about the Wu-Tang Clan, can we rob it back? Like I want things that like they're
sure
if triggering mechanisms to make it a public episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can hack the cryptography in order
I'll start Bitcoin mining just to set it public.
How much have you lost, by the way, in the recent downturn
of in Dogecoin?
Did you just say doggy coin?
is it Doge? Doggy?
It's Dogecoin. It's Dogecoin, but I will never let you forget that you said doggy coin.
Zero. John, do you have a single Bitcoin?
I may or may not be invested in some cryptocurrency, yes.
I worry about you. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking about Tip the Kitchen and learning more about the Fifth Street Group's initiatives.
The Charlotte Podcast is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
All right, we are back with repeat guests. We love repeat guests. I'm not sure we've ever had repeat guests in the same month before, which Miller, I'm excited about. So welcome back, members of the Fifth Street group, including a new one. So we have, so just to establish everybody else, I'll say your names and you guys say hi. So Pat.
Hi.
Chef Jamie, welcome back.
What's up? Thank you.
And then welcoming for the first time. So nice to meet you. Madison, welcome to the Charlotte Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Having us.
So a couple weeks ago, we had Pat and Jamie on to kind of talk about the journey thus far and Tip the Kitchen specifically. And we got a little bit of their background at the time, but we'd love to hear kind of how you got involved and what your role is with Fifth Street Group. And then as you are the eyes and ears on the ground of Tip the Kitchen, want to kind of get your perspective because we haven't gotten that yet. So if you could, what's your Charlotte story? How'd you come to be a part of the group and what's your story?
So I started with these guys about 3.5 years ago as a server. I had just moved to South Carolina. kind of right off the boat, started working for them. And I worked for a year and a half serving, and I kind of had a conversation with Pat one day about ops and things that I observed. And he asked me if I'd ever wanted to go into management, and it was never really something that, it was always a secondary job for me. I always had some other vision of what I'd be doing. But I guess we kind of jumped right into it when I was floor managing. I started an MIT program with them, and then I was kind of put on the floor right away. Within like 3 months of that, I was AGM. And I mean, I don't know. I think there's just like, there's a hospitality gene. I could say, I could try every other avenue and every other path my life would have brought me down. But I worked in restaurants since I was 14. And it's, like I said, it's in your genes, you know?
So, so you're a savant. You're a savant.
She kept asking for more work, and we kept giving it to her. That's really what got it. She's being very humble right now. She just took work from us. So we work less, and she works more now. But we're okay with that model.
Well, there you go.
I like the way this model's going.
Well, I think a lot of the times they gave me the opportunity, not necessarily based on my experience or me having the knowledge already, but I've learned so much and they've taught so much that they may have given me the position before I've actually maybe earned it. and then I grow into it. And I think that's what they do with a lot of people in their company. We've been expanding pretty rapidly right now. We're bringing in outside hires, and there's something to be said about kind of that farm team that we have in our MIT programs. And it's extremely valuable.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what, if the way you guys had operated was, hey, here's the playbook, follow it to the T, and then execute on it and don't step out of line and don't make a mistake, then you guys probably wouldn't have come up with new innovations on the heel of a pandemic, right? So so that's far so good. So
that actually leads to a question, Madison, I have for you. We talked to Jamie and Pat, and they kind of seem like guys who'd like to try shit. What percentage of your job is just taking something they say and saying, this is doable, this is going to take X amount of time, or get the hell out of my office?
This is a great question. Well done, man.
100% of my job is, I mean, our slogan, our company slogan is make it happen. Yeah. And honestly, in opening Tempest, so I opened Tempest as a GM there, and there were so many things. I mean, I've learned things about plumbing and electrician work and I mean, everything, the entire gamut, that he'd just be like, okay, make this happen. And I'm like, I don't even know who to call, you know, but that type of learning is invaluable.
Well, it sounds like Tip the Kitchen is kind of one of those things where, you know, it comes from a spark of inspiration that the entire team has had. And you've been one of the people working directly with that. We got into a little bit last time. And I was wondering, Madison, if you can kind of give us a little bit deeper dive of what is the Tip of the Kitchen, and then we can kind of, as a group, get into the results that we're seeing so far.
Yeah. Tip the Kitchen, like you guys mentioned, I think something really positive coming out of a really difficult year. It made everyone kind of take a closer look at the business and what was working and what wasn't working. I know we've talked about the amount of people that are the percentage of people that have left this industry. There has to be a reason for that. Why have 30% of people walked away from this industry? And it's because it was broken. Like, there was real systemic problems in what was happening. And I think shining the spotlight on the wage gap between what front of house and back of house makes, and at least using that as a platform and a jump point to address other issues that we see. But the Tip the Kitchen initiative really does that. It's trying to bridge that, not only the pay gap, but also the relationship. I've worked in so many restaurants in my life where, I mean, chefs hate the front of house. Like, they just, they're angry, and it's not a cohesive operation where everyone's, you know, working together. And this, I've seen that a lot firsthand. And that's something you can't necessarily put down on a piece of paper or get analytics on. But seeing the relationship change, seeing servers at first be kind of standoffish about the idea, and they're a little worried, like, wait a second, is this going to cut into my tip money? And, you know, all of that, to now like bragging to each other, like, hey, I brought in $95 for the kitchen tonight, and I brought in $105. And like seeing them, like, we had a night one time at Tempest where The servers actually handed out the envelopes, and like they were all cute and like clapping for them and whatever, because they made over $100 that night or something. And it was just like that kind of unity. There was always the separation front and back of house. And it's not just financially changing the industry, but also inside the actual operation changing as well. So
yeah. Well, I mean, that's like nothing short of incredible to make a cultural change like that. Cause it's one thing. And we don't do a lot of prep on this podcast, but the prep that we have done is kind of asked about like the sustainability of,
what the hell, John, what the hell?
Don't, sorry. Don't, I know we don't like, to show how the sausage is made, but a question about the sustainability of it. And like, it's one thing to have the economics work out, like, but at the same time, where like kind of what you're saying, not to put words in your mouth, but like, is the fact that this is the goal ultimately was kind of the cultural change. Economics are almost like a part of that, certainly intertwined with it, but to achieve the cultural change in such a short amount of time is pretty incredible. So to kind of have two giant green check marks a month into it, is that how far along we are? Is that a little over? Yeah. So culturally, it seems to be working so far. So take us through kind of the economics and day-to-day. Like, what have you seen? I don't know if Pat, maybe you're a little more dialed into it, but just kind of what have you guys seen in terms of a month into it? Seems to be working for everybody culturally, but is this sustainable from kind of a business standpoint?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. For sure. I think we touched on, I can't remember exactly what we touched on last time, and Pat can probably clean this up a little bit, but we believe that a lot of our negative costs related to turnover and training and waste, right, that comes with just the natural turnover of business is going to offset any increases in our operation costs. What was that? What are our total operation costs raised as a result of this? Like 3%?
2.1%.
2.2%. So we believe 2.1% increase in our operation costs directly related to this initiative. But we believe that you know, the majority of that, at least 1% of that, is going to come back to us by way of staff retention, increased productivity, better product, and just general, it's like, you know what? I don't hate going to work anymore. Like, to me, that's priceless.
Right. Right.
Like enjoying my team and having happy, inspired people around is like, it's worth more than 2%. You know what I mean?
Right.
Right. So in that sense, I would say it's absolutely sustainable for sure.
Well, I imagine part of that too is like the opportunity costs of just May 2021 and the hospitality industry, right? Because I mean, there's a lot of places that can't hire, can't open and stay open because they can't hire people. And I guess last time you guys were on, you were talking about kind of being fully staffed and kind of almost like having too many people willing to work for you. So has that kept up? Is that the situation where you guys are?
I hired three people today. I hired three people today in Charlotte, which is like, you know, I think we talked what, like 2 weeks ago or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And so I think the word is getting out. People are receptive and interested. And we have experience with it now. We've done this for a month. We know that it works, and we've got staff that are like, holy smokes, this is real. Like, yeah, this is legit. This isn't just a scam or a scheme or a wishful thinking, you know, this is
real. Right.
And so that kind of that's interesting to me, because we keep hearing the news stories or seeing the screenshots of people saying, you know, we can't hire anybody, you know, X, Y, Z, all this stuff in restaurants. Are you guys having, you don't have to name names, are other,
right? Yeah, what's that? Yeah. Nobody wants to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something, obviously you're not seeing it, but are you seeing other restaurants or groups coming to you to say like, hey, is this a people tip the kitchen? Are you beginning to see those conversations from the other us? Yes is the answer.
They're reaching out to all of us.
Yeah.
Pat's getting hit up from colleagues and people in the industry. I got hit up by a chef today and another chef in Wilmington just the other day, like asking, how does it work? Like, give us the deets. Like, you know, what are you guys doing? What kind of response are you seeing? A lot of people are interested.
Some people have started to do something like it or a variation. Mm-hmm. You know, we are getting some traction and people are interested. Like they want to know if it's right for them.
I'm curious how, so you guys have talked a lot about culture and you've hit on a little bit so far. And certainly last time you guys were on, kind of there's only we, and kind of the a lot of the reasons you guys even started getting into the business on your own. Do you guys really think this is always like franchisable and repeatable elsewhere, or does it take the commitment of folks like yourself to repeat?
Tip the Kitchen?
Yeah, it's for Tip the Kitchen specifically.
I think absolutely. I think honestly, if this catches on in any way, other places are not going to have a choice. Just from a competitive standpoint perspective, if we're able to pay our kitchen guys a company-wide average of $24 an hour, and that's the average that it's been in the company.
Wow.
$25 an hour. I mean, it's 23 to 25, somewhere in that range. I think it's 24.
Wait, so pre-Tip the Kitchen, like what are you talking about? Like what, I mean,
company-wide average for us, which was above market, was probably 17.
Right. Yeah.
16, 17. So that's, I mean, that's the marketplace is probably $15 an hour or less.
Yeah.
And you know, the entry level positions like dishwasher, low level line cook positions. I don't mean low level people.
Entry level. Yeah.
That's like, a better way of saying that. You know, those guys are coming in at 12, 13, 14 bucks an hour, which, as we discussed a little bit, I think is below livable wage by a pretty huge margin. It's frankly on the line of poverty. And so we are now in a position where Jamie said it today to one of the guys he hired. He's like, I can guarantee you, you're going to make at least $20 an hour. And
I think I told him, like, I can guarantee him 25
an hour. Yeah. I mean, that's in our world. Up,
I had no problem saying that to him.
That doesn't exist. And the fact that we're able to do that gives us such an enormous competitive advantage versus right now every other restaurant, because no one can pay that. I mean, I think that some of the staff members at Tempest and Charleston are the highest paid kitchen employees in the country.
I think they're making more than we are
in the U.S. I mean, I believe that. I mean, you've got crazy guys in the kitchen that are averaging $30 an hour. I don't know. I mean, maybe there are some union jobs out west potentially, but I don't know. Certainly not.
Yeah.
Not in the hospitality business. Yeah.
Right.
Business.
I love that you guys don't appear to be satisfied even with Tip the Kitchen. It's like, what's the next step? And one of the things John and I are talking about, one of our new favorite things to do is to just in the morning, check Pat's Twitter just to see if something overnight has stirred.
They caught on to it. They know.
And my first question is, Madison, do you check that Twitter feed every morning just to say, oh no, what do I have to do now?
What's coming out?
No. Not to say, what do I have to do? What do I get to do today?
There you go.
I'm really not saying that to like kiss ass, but I mean it. Like we're moving at a really quick pace and making such big changes that we see that it's not like you're trying to, you know, this pipe dream of like one day I want to change the industry or do something like this. Like every single day we see results, you know, every single day we see the numbers come in. We see the people that are having their lives change. Like I'm not just saying this, but really that amount of income. I mean, I'll be honest, like it was life-changing for me when I moved into management and I had, you know, a steady income coming in, and then I got a raise when I got a promotion and I got another raise. Like I've seen that personally, how, you know, money isn't everything, but it helps a lot, you know? So these people back of house to be able to see that every single day, it really does, you know, it makes it less of a drag or what do I have to do today, and more of a, we're all on board. There's not one person. I mean, Pat asked me this the other day. He was like, is there anybody that's like talking about this and like, you know, whatever. And there's not a single person that either has a negative thing to say about it, or it isn't benefiting their job somehow, no matter what position in the house. The more you have employee retention and happy employees and people that want to be there and people that feel appreciated more than anything, the more you have that, the easier all of our jobs are. So,
yeah, And it seems like it's now Tip Kitchen's helping the employee part. And Pat, one thing I want to get into is I've seen a couple of threads where it's like even the industry as a whole, how do you begin to look at like customer service as terms of restaurants being the customers and how they're treated by vendors and things like that. And I know that that's something you're looking at, and I'd be interested to hear is like, how do you try to change things that are more systemic? Like I think those point of sale was a big issue you're having. How are you beginning to attack that, even as you have Tip Kitchen and other stuff going on?
Something that we say to new managers, this is actually an awesome question.
Yeah.
I'm going to totally go off on this
one. Like, hold up.
We did a little bit of planning, Pat, just a little bit. I read
something that we say to new managers during training. One of the most important lessons when it comes to interacting with each other and the staff is never let a bullshit answer go unrebutted. Because what that does is it allows nonsense to take root. And once it takes root, it's insidious and damaging to your business as a whole. For whatever reason, there has been a culture around restaurants, basically since Yelp started, which I remember the first time I was Yelped back in New York, 2006, Jesus, 16. We were here, but, where restaurants have not figured out how to deal with online reviews and also the empowerment, that has given to the guests. And so the pendulum really swung really far towards guests to the point where it's become okay for people to go online and just say whatever they want. To say it could be a lie, it could be slanderous, it could be a completely fabricated experience, it could be a faulty understanding of a true experience. And restaurants have been powerless for a really long time to do anything about it because they're worried about, you know, pushback, they're worried about losing guests or whatever. Now, the problem, and I understand that, we've been that way too, but it's a terrible burden on the people that work in our industry every single day to wake up and read something hateful and shitty and petty about the work they bust their ass to. It's terrible. It has a horrible long-term impact on you psychologically. It makes the managers miserable all the time. And it's only like 5-10% of your total customer base, but that's all you end up spending your time talking about is are these crazy reviews. And if it's something that's earned, that you're deserving, okay, well, you know what? You deserve to get, you know, beat up a little bit. And you should take a hard look at your company and how you do business if you earn that shitty review. But a lot of times it's disproportionate where it's like, hey, I stubbed my toe. You know, I need to wear a cast for a month. It's just, it's not a one-to-one ratio. It's like, hey, this thing that was a minor issue happened at the restaurant. One star, I'm going to post a one-star review on every single review site.
Right.
You know, I'm going to say a whole bunch of shit that really didn't happen. It creates a very, very sort of perpetually hostile atmosphere amongst management and then in turn down to the service staff. And that's a problem that we feel it's not as big a problem as the wage gap front back of the house, which is why we went after that first. But it's a real problem to allow people to be this way and to not have the ability to fight back a little bit. So that's what we're going to do.
and the reason this is so important is because it affected our business this way. Like we checked the reviews in the early days to make sure we were going to make it. And we, you know, we needed to get acceptance from all these like online review sites to make sure we're doing the right thing. And we did that for so long as part of our business model. And it made us miserable, like reading these kind of negative reviews and stuff. And I think finally, you know, with the momentum, we're like, you know what? Like, fuck that. Like, we're not going to allow that to rule how we do business. You know, we're not going to let it affect how our team does their job, you know, or ruin their inspiration or their, you know, their quality of work. You know, so we think that.
But what we want to do is be constructive about it. We don't want to just go online and bitch.
Right.
That's counterproductive.
It's negativity. We don't want negativity.
We want to put information out there into the world that is a dialogue about, like, for example, the thing that went mini viral that I posted about the rude customers at LaBelle Helene for our soft.
Yeah, you couldn't believe it. Name them. John doesn't apologize. You can. That was John. We apologize.
Shocked by how much engagement that got. It's easily the most engaged anything I've ever posted has been. But you know, I don't want to. I didn't bring that up because I wanted to complain about it. I brought it up because it was something that I think is problematic, is people's behavior and the number of people that have reached out to me since then that are like, either they're like, oh my God, that's awful, I'm so sorry that happened, or how often does that happen? That's the question I get the most. And I'm like, every fucking day, not just every day, multiple times a day, people in the restaurant business deal with people being completely unacceptable. And that's part of the dialogue that I want to have is like, guys, this is what's really happening out there. You know, like, this is the reality of what's happening in our world. And I think once you have a more informed customer base, you start to be a little more empathetic. It's like a business built on empathy, and you've got a customer base that's running around up. They're all just raging narcissists right now because of Yelp and Open Table and all this shit, where it's like, I can go online and I can write anything I want with impunity. I am a critic. I'm a quote unquote foodie, which, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, a foodie is someone who likes fucking good food, which, who the fuck does like good food?
That's right. By the way, I completely share. I could not agree with you more.
Doesn't, yeah, like, I'm a non-foodie. I like eating shitty food.
Yeah. Me too.
Actually, I do like
eating shitty food. I'm one of those as well.
So anyways, I'm just shining a light on that. It's like the first thing that has to happen is like, this is a problem.
Right.
And it's having this kind of an impact on the industry. And if we can have a candid conversation about it, I think a lot of people might change their approach. And I'm not looking to change everybody, but if there's 10 people that are behaving in a way that I think is counterproductive, if we can change the opinion of 40% of 4 people, that's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so what's kind of is shining a light on it and kind of airing it the answer, or are you guys kind of working through kind of what's next? Like, is there Fifth Street Group talks or Yelp rebuttal sites, or like what's kind of next as far as that's concerned?
Yes.
Yes is the answer. We're going to talk about it.
I think the point of the page is to make
a conversation.
So what I want to do is let's post a review, and we just use a couple from the restaurants that we own right now, just because it's easy fodder.
Mm-hmm.
But our intention long term is to just try to find reviews throughout, you know, Charlotte or Charleston or Nashville ultimately, or anybody that we are, and find reviews that we think reflect a certain either great facet of the restaurant business and how incredible it could be. We had a review. I was just showing it to Jamie from the youngest living Medal of Honor winner.
Awesome.
Who came to dinner at Five Church. And I mean, we were all kind of choked up when we read it, honestly. It was like, this is a guy who literally jumped on a grenade to save other people's lives. And he came into the restaurant and wrote us this totally spectacular letter. And that's the whole point. We value him. He values us. And it's a reciprocated positive relationship. And that's worth talking about too, not just complaining, but it's also about taking a review in a way that was written in it, like a really terrible way, in a shitty way, in a condescending, self-righteous indignation nonsense. And to say, okay, here's what really happened in this scenario, or here's what we think happened. Here's the way that we would want that to be dealt with on our end as restaurant owners or as restaurant operators. Here's how we get to where we all want to go, which is that you have a positive relationship. We are happy with your experience. You spend money and we deliver our product, and it's something that can go on and on forever. You can't do that if everybody's running their computer in some dark corner of their house just to, like, you know, talk shit about your tater tots. You know, there's got to be something better to be doing. You know, that's
right.
We want to use examples of what we believe are problematic reviews because of the behavior behind it, and try to outline a different approach, not a right way or a wrong way, because that's judgmental, but rather just what we think would be most productive from our perspective as restaurant owners and operators.
Yeah, no, I think that it's tremendously, like, it's so optimistic to see your guys' passion. Like, as someone who's, you know, waited tables a couple of summers, so it seemed like if I had I worked for a crazy German in an Italian space, and his name was Jan, and he yelled at me and called me a daddy's boy once. That's the closest I've ever come to fighting somebody.
What does daddy's boy mean? Wait, no. Why?
I asked for a week.
What'd you do?
I asked for like one day off because my dad, I was at the beach. And I was like, my dad's coming to town. I'll have a day off and go hang out with him. And he's like, called me a daddy's boy. And I'm like,
classic daddy's like, boy move.
Thank you. Totally something I would have done back in the day.
For sure.
Yeah. But you wouldn't have been a German running an Italian restaurant and failing at SEMA. But I think it's so cool to see passionate people who care about their people, or people working for them. And I think that I was just scrolling through your timeline, Patrick, or Pat, and there's just like, you admit your faults as well and how you're trying to work through this. I think that's a big valuable part of you guys being very open. And one thing I think that is also, we're at a point in time as we still at the end of a pandemic, but emerge from mask and stuff like that is, and maybe Madison, you might be the right person to hear this. It's like, what is the optimism? Are you seeing people coming to restaurants, getting excited? Like, what is the perspective of patrons coming back to be in restaurant? What are you guys seeing there?
I think that's the thing. I mean, that goes along with what you guys were just talking about with the review sites is, if you look at, like, if you can look past the people that are being completely unreasonable, I think that people genuinely want, they're we're the underdog right now, right? I think for the most part, people do come out and they want us to do good. And I almost, to some of the bad reviews, like, and I say this to staff sometimes when we, you know, don't see eye to eye on something, but like, we're not your enemy. And I feel like people come in with that approach sometimes, and they'll review with that approach of like, they're a food critic, or they're supposed to be there to tear us down. I think for the most part, that's not what we're seeing. I think now more than ever, we have people coming in just excited to be out and about and hear laughter in the air and that kind of stuff. But it's kind of hard, you know, you always naturally go to the negative. So if you see all these reviews, I mean, Tempest last week got 520 star reviews in a week, a record-breaking week. Like, we did record numbers, the most we've ever done in the company. But you'll still go back through those reviews, and out of 25 stars, I still personally, I'll read the negative ones and just like, man, well, like, how is this person acting that? Like, or what could we have done differently, or whatever it is, you kind of go to that spot. And that's what Pat was talking about, the kind of abuse you take. I could go to 25 tables a night and do table touches, and they're raving and they're, you know, almost in tears at how much they loved everything. But then I get that one customer that night that just berates you and because of, you know, an accident. And a lot of times we're human, you know, like, there will be errors. I think there is some value in negative reviews. It's just the way people bring it to your attention and the way people take it. We've had this talk before, Pat and I, on threads and stuff, where, you know, if you see a consistent thing coming up in a review, okay, we have to address it. There's a problem. If it's a one-off, you know, that is what it is. But if there's actually a problem behind it, like, reviews can be very valuable. And I think maybe opening up the conversation to shine light on the negative perspective, not being constructive or not being productive in doing anything. Like, I don't understand what people that review that way expect to get out of it. You know, we already comped your meal. We already took care of you. We already.
There's been studies done about this where there's a dopamine release when people feel self-righteous indignation. That's like a real chemical response, especially when people like agree with them, when they get likes. It's a drug. It's they've done this on Facebook. What's that documentary called? It's pretty demented. It's
Social Dilemma.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. I refuse to watch it because it'll show you how broken my brain is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Miller's patient zero for that.
But guys, this has been phenomenal having you on for two episodes. There's just so much more to go in. But what I would like to do is, let's all go our separate ways. And let's agree to meet up in a year and see how things are. But I think that'd be really cool to do a follow-up in a year and stay in touch throughout this time. But just to see how Tip the Kitchen's going, all the other stuff you're working on and going from there. But this is just, thank you so much for your time. This has been incredible.
Thanks for having us, guys. It's fun.
All right, we're back. All right. As John says, just John and Miller. Just steal your thunder, John. Just the two of us. But what a lovely conversation. I really do want us to get back together in a year and see how things have evolved, things have gone. Like, even a month, there's been so many changes. But how do you, so many changes?
Yeah, well, you said a year, and I was like, what? That's so far away. Like,
well, like we as just much lived as through the longest year, year,
just like 2 weeks.
Well, I think we've That's also fair. Lost track of time, like, based on 2020. That year was forever.
Yeah, I get it.
How many years do you think a year used to be off your life?
Oh my God.
Or do you think it added a lot of years?
No, definitely not. 4, 5. Like, I would have lived to, like, what age, what age do you think you will die? Like, I think I was going to live till 90, and now I'll live to 85.
No.
But I think, you don't think I'll make it that long?
There's no way you're making.
No
cryptocurrency. Like,
what do you give me? Your list. Yeah, I don't stress about it though. I have a relatively stress free life. What do you think? Tell me my doom clock.
I'm gonna feel really crappy if this comes true.
If you say anything in the 60s, you're a giant asshole.
I think you'll probably outlive me.
What?
That's a low bar.
I don't know. I think we'll be close. Oh, come on.
What if we went out together, like holding hands as we podcasted?
Like Thelma and Louise situation. Yeah. The young Brad Pitt in the back.
Yep.
Wait, now give me a number. I need a number. I'm not going to move on until you give me a number.
Are you thinking of a number for me?
I can. I my number is pretty high for you.
For modern medicine, I just don't know what's going to be changing. I think you'll like 78.
Wow, that's so low. it's like insultingly low.
Do you want? Right, keep going. There's so many questions.
I got you. I peg you for mid 90s.
I don't want that.
A while. Really, mid 90s? Yeah. My grandfather's mid 90s. He's doing all right. It's like, I don't know, 90 is a speed bump, man.
Yeah.
I think around there is good.
Man, this has been a
very... Is this the cold open? Should we put this at the top?
No, we should delete this file. John, cheers.
Right, hey, cheers and cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Not cheers, this conversation.
Cheers to living. Cheers to living too long. Charlotte specific cheers and jeers. We got pretty deep there. Charlotte specific cheers and jeers. So cheers. Hey, I just want to mark this moment in time. Cheers
you're gonna jinx it.
The lack. What?
You're gonna jinx it.
Oh, now you're just being a fear monger. Cheers to the lack of spread of the novel coronavirus in Mecklenburg County, because I have been one of those people that have checked the stats every single day for over a year.
God, I did that too. It's how are we? That's why our years are taken off our life, is checking that stupid website.
So, yeah,
I have a COVID folder as a bookmark, and it has all the stats from both county and state.
Well, that's insane. But I would check. So here's my take: is that I would I play fantasy sports throughout the year. So
okay. I play fantasy COVID.
Numbers. I mean, that's kind of what it turned into. Like, I'm not proud of that. I wouldn't recommend anyone do that. But that is kind of what happened. It's like it kind of turned into fantasy sports for me. Like seeing what the numbers were. Like this time a year ago, like checking like where how flat was the curve getting, right? At like May of last year.
You should not share these things.
What, that I checked the stats a year ago?
No, it was like fantasy football for you.
I mean, this is a safe place for us to discuss these topics. I'm not like, obviously there's a lot of pain and suffering that is way different than fantasy football, but in terms of my personal habits statistics.
I will tell you this. I think from the pandemic, we may have taken years off your life. I think you still look the same. I think I look 5 years older from pandemic.
5 years older. I don't know. I haven't seen you in person in a while, so
I can't wait for that hug. It's going to be great.
It is going to be a great hug. We're both vaccinated, so I'm ready. I will hug you when we see each other in person.
If I see you, I'm gonna slip in that shed in the back of your house.
Hug coming. Yeah.
Great. All right. So you're very, your cheers are lack of novel coronavirus in Mecklenburg County. Knock on.
Yeah, that's right. It's the lowest the stats have ever been. Been checking for 14 months and lowest stats I've ever seen. So I think that's worthy of mentioning. So my jeers is just city council. Like, so I have, this is a two part comment. I know how you feel about this, but, and you wouldn't say part one of this. And part one, like, hats off to anyone who participates voluntarily in our local government. It's a thankless job. They voted today not to raise the salary that you get by being on city council. You don't make any money. People just yell at you all the time. They voted
to raise it.
Not for city council.
They voted to raise it, I think.
Oh, they did? But not as much as they wanted, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so like, but the point is, it's still like the way we're organized, like
we're very in the know. This podcast is in the know.
Yeah, right. But my point isn't about the money. My point is, like, they're civil servants, even the ones I don't like, who will remain nameless. Like, there is, what's the quote about, like, entering the field of battle? Like, they're putting themselves out there.
Is it a Marcus Aurelius quote?
No, I forget who it is. But the man who enters the field of battle versus the ones that, like, stand in the stands and jeer. Anyway, my point is, like, part one is, like, hats off to anybody that kind of willingly takes on the daggers of being in public service. But at the same time, like, what's petty bickering going on?
Get it together, like, guys.
Yeah, it's pathetic. And it's not just city council.
I watched 3 hours of that city council, and I watched like an hour of the one today. It's Wednesday, and it's just like, I understand people have differences, opinions, and all that stuff. I understand that, like, people are going to disagree and be disappointed, but it's just like there's no desire to work together, which is probably, like, more a reflection of America today. But it's just like, I don't know. It just feels like we were promised so much. I feel like we're the fools, to be honest. It's like we had.
You're the fool because you had hope for them.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You think city? Admit it right now. You think city council are superheroes?
Yeah, for sure.
You do. You think they could change everything? Yeah. Meanwhile, Marcus Jones is I haven't even seen the Marvel movies, but Marcus Jones is like Thanos. Who, like, has all the power.
Marcus Jones is good. But no, it's just like I think the worst thing they ever did was pose for those millennial city council.
I totally agree with that. The PR. 100% agree.
Like, they set themselves up for failure by believing in, like, youth. And instead, with their youth came a little bit of arrogance. My perspective.
The media narrative that they had a hand in crafting was, hey, all the young people are going to make a bunch of change together, like, and it will rise above, like, political spectrum differences. And if you say that, then you've got to follow through on it. And I'm not sure that has happened. And that is at least the situation we're in now, by and large, even though, like, I don't know. Based on the actions of the last 48 hours, I'm not sure all of those parties were the ones that were throwing the barbs, but still.
Yeah, it's just interesting.
It's disappointing. I won't even say Charlotte deserves better, because I think there's a lot of talent on who is serving on city council and board of county commissioners, but Charlotte deserves more professional action.
That's it. That's the thing we're saying. Comments. It seems to be immature right now.
Yes, I agree. And that's very rich coming from me and you. But still.
The same people who spent minutes debating on how soon they're going to die based on everything. Man, this has been a really weird episode. It's taking some turns. The interview is good.
I would say we've covered a lot of ground. I don't know. Maybe that's what makes us delightful to our thousands and thousands of fans.
I thought you were going to say our significant others, and I was like, they do not find us.
No, absolutely not. I would never say that. Certainly not being in a medium that was recorded.
Well, John, what random animal noise were we making tonight?
Let's do a solemn
Charlotte buzz. Knight?
No, we'll do that next. No, solemn buzz to signal. We could buzz taps to signal the end of the Hornet season.
I turned on the game. The first Hornet game I turned on all season. I turned it on at the beginning of the third quarter.
My son was so excited. He's wearing his LaMelo Jamal, like brand new jersey. So excited to watch the game. Like first time he's been like super pumped. And then I didn't even say anything. I was just like, all right, it's time to go to bed at halftime. And he didn't realize. And then this morning he was like, oh, did the Hornets win last night? I was like, they did not.
But is this your old? Wait, I have questions. Is this your oldest son?
Yes.
Jersey. Nice jersey? Like what? You get a knockoff?
The nicest. No, super nice jersey.
See, I think this is a really good parenting move by you because you know it can be rotated through each son.
100%.
I love that. I love that value pick. All right, let's buzz taps.
All right. Mm-hmm.